Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Zach, Stephen A. mentioned get you some help. Paxson's built a couple winners in Chicago. Do you have confidence that your GM can get you the help you need?
They might speak differently, man, but, you know, I'm with the team, man. You know, I gotta put the team first. Their table, man. I gotta put the team first. But, you know, it's just the situation we're in right now.
Stop.
Welcome in, 670 The Score. I'm Rick Camp. Going to be alongside Arthur Arkish here. We've got you until 10 o'clock. You heard really the sound of the day from First Take on ESPN. Zach LaVine on the set. And boy, did Bulls Nation, hashtag Bulls Nation, let their voices be heard. We got a lot to get to between now and 10 o'clock here on 670 The Score. 312-644-6767 is the number. 670-11 on the text line. We got a busy night for you here. 7 o'clock, we are going to speak with Kevin Kaduk of the Midway Minute Newsletter, formerly of Yahoo Sports. If you're like, boy, that name really sounds familiar. You probably read him on Yahoo. 8:20, we'll speak with Russell Dorsey from MLB.com. Do an MLB hit, see what's going on in spring training. Some stories starting to form just as we're getting into spring training. Everybody's reporting now and really getting things underway. And at some point during the show, or earlier in the day, I had a conversation with John Hollinger, the senior NBA analyst for The Athletic, who does the Hollinger and Duncan podcast, and also just got out of the Memphis Grizzlies front office. He'd been in their front office for 8 years. So with everything going on with the Bulls, as you heard on the cut coming in, and just where the NBA is at the All-Star break, if you're just really starting to get into the NBA now that the football season's over and baseball season's not quite here yet, good stuff from him. We'll catch you up on that. So, I mean, we have to get into it right away. What happened today on First Take? Normally, I'll be honest, I'm not someone that puts much stock in First Take really ever. But what happened today is so much beyond the normal, okay, you take this side of an argument, I'll take this side of the argument, the other side of the argument. It was the national stage with the Bulls involved right here for you. Everybody's tuned in outside of live programming on ESPN, outside of their live game coverage. First Take's the thing. And as I welcome in Arthur Arkish here, Arthur, that Bulls sound today of Bulls Nation was quite a thing to have on that stage. The Fire Garpax chants are absolutely a thing.
Yeah, it's probably not a great look, a great sound for this Bears, for this Bulls franchise, is hosting its first All-Star game in quite some time. Obviously is not represented in the All-Star game either. And then this is just compounding. You know, it's funny, Rick, because I was on last week, I think last Friday night, and I had asked, I was on with Hub, and I said, what's rock bottom look like for the Bulls? Are we there yet? I'm wondering if today was it, because, I mean, I felt like it last week when I was asking the question. They sit tight at the trade deadline, and some not very good rationalizations for some of the inactivity, and then today things just got much worse.
So, before we get too much further, I know there was a bigger chunk of that. So there's about 3 minutes to give a little bit of context. I'm all about context. So let's take a listen to, this is Zach LaVine on First Take with Stephen A. Smith, Max Kellerman. And here's a little bit more of the conversation that led to the Fire Garpax chants.
The one reason to cheer.
for the Chicago Bulls this year.
Be nice. It's Valentine's Day.
It's the truth. Nice. He's a bad brother. I'm just, hey, listen, he ain't going to say it. He can't say something like that. I wouldn't ask him to.
Well, wait a
so
minute.
I'll say it for him.
He's beloved, though.
You going to get the brother some help, Chicago Bulls? That's all a brother asks.
Jesus Christ.
Get him some help.
Oh, man.
You hear him chanting All-Star.
Yes.
Paxson's built a couple winners in Chicago. Do you have confidence that your GM can get you the help you need?
They might speak differently, man, but, you know, I'm with the team, man. You know, I got to put the team first. They're terrible, man. I got to put the team first. But, you know, it's just the situation we're in right now.
Stop. It's Valentine's Day.
Don't do that.
Let's not get uncomfortable.
You know Chicago get rowdy. Yeah. But, you know, I'm staying with the team, man. And, you know, obviously I'm going to do everything I can to help him get back here.
Hey, I'm one of those guys that, listen, especially with what we've seen D-Wade do, LeBron and others, when you ultimately elevate your level of play to a certain degree, suddenly it doesn't become about you anymore. It also becomes about your ability to recruit. First of all, do you think, are you interested in recruiting for Chicago? And number two, outside this damn encased position that we're in, it's freezing out there, bro.
Yeah.
How difficult is it going to be for you to get dudes to come here?
We got to have a certain style of play and a culture to where people want to come and play with us. And, you know, I think, you know, me personally, it starts with hard work and us having an understanding of where we going to build this thing and where it wants to go. So, yeah, I'm always in the mood to bring, you know, good players and talent in here. You know, obviously the elements ain't going to help that a lot. It's not L.A., but we're going to do what we can do, and I'm going to definitely do my part.
Are you mad about the All-Star stuff?
Oh, no, I'm not. Yeah, no. I mean, am I mad about it? You know, I'm upset because I feel like I played at All-Star level, but I understand, you know, what goes into it as well. You know, the way it's going now, you have to be in the playoff hunt and things like that. And, you know, I think, obviously, there's a lot of players that are deserving. You know, I think I'm one that as well, but, you know, I'm not going to let that define my game, you know, where I'm going. I know who I am.
Which player out there would you like to play with? When you think we would complement each other, who do you see?
Man, you know, there's a lot of dudes out there I'd love to play with, but, you know, is it going to be realistic? You know,
let's hear both. What's ideal? What's realistic?
You know, everybody wants to play with the best players in the world. You know, I would love to go out there and play with, you know, a dude like LeBron James, you know, but you're not going to get those type of opportunities, I don't think.
Unless you wind up on the Lakers, that's right.
You know, yeah, things like that. But, man, you know, I'd love to play for a point guard, you know. You can get up and down the floor and pass the ball up like that. And, you know, sometimes playing with a dominant big man is great, too, because if you get the double team,
so let me hear this.
Out.
Embiid is a big man. I'm trying to think of who a point guard could be. And then otherwise, you'd have to go to the Lakers. They couldn't bring anyone to you.
So it's East or West Coast, either one. This is crazy.
All right, so there's a little more context for you on what Zach LaVine had to say. And really, it's just funny because you could hear him being like, yeah, I know what this is going to turn into when they mention just the thought of management and bringing people into Chicago. And you know what? I don't blame Zach LaVine for, you know, he's asked the question. He's got to say something in terms of players he'd want to throw out there. But I just want to, by the way, I got to say this before I have a chance to forget, because Lord knows I will. My second biggest takeaway out of that is Max Kellerman was hungover. He sounded rough. That Chicago flu is still real, yet the Bulls still have problems winning at home.
Yeah, there's a lot to take away from that, but I will say that I kind of credit Zach for taking an inherently awkward situation and not making it more so.
True.
Not to say that there's probably a lot of employees who are just going to, you know, rail on their employers in that spot on live television, but I thought he handled it about as well as can be expected. Was this outside at Navy Pier?
I think it was.
It must have been an auditorium.
Like, yeah. It was like whatever the new build. I never go to Navy Pier, so it's like I when I come into the city, I go to and from work, and that's about it. So it's like whatever the new building is over there.
Okay.
So I mean, it was inside because I didn't see people wanting to die.
Yeah, right. So, it's about -15 with the wind chill. It probably was inside.
Probably not great.
I was thinking in the back of my head, that is commitment for these fans or these, disenchanted Bulls fans who not only show up but are out there in the elements with this choreographed cheer. That's something, man. That's some vitriol for the situation.
Absolutely. I give them credit. In this station and kind of in Chicago media a lot of times, we say if you really want change to happen, you have to not show up or be very loud in the way you show your displeasure.
Right.
So you got that second part there. When you look at attendance this year, when you look at just the overall, like, average total fans, the Bulls are still, I believe, a 10th or 11th. But when you go to percent of capacity of the building, the Bulls are the lowest they've been this century, 23rd in the league.
Oh, wow.
So while they're still filling just a hair over 90% of the building every night, even when they were in the Cornell David years, the Ron Mercer years, you know, leading into Ben Gordon, they were still top five. The lowest they had been before these last two seasons was like 11th in capacity, then 18th last year, and 23rd this year.
Wow.
So if you combine those attendance numbers, which we know matter to this front office, to this ownership group, and you put that with the fact of just the lens that's on Chicago this weekend, outside of things working great and being perfect and the weather being better in Chicago, giving off a great impression and a great organization that would have been a couple of years in the making. I think the other extreme, where we're at right now, is exactly what a lot of Bulls fans would want.
Yeah, it makes sense. And I heard you mention that we know this ownership group, this management team cares about attendance. And of course they do, because they're all in this to make money, and that's, will drive revenue, I understand. But this is kind of, as you just sort of quantified, somewhat uncharted water for them as well, territory mm-hmm. that they're in too. Which I guess kind of adds to the whole unpredictable sort of, volatile nature of what the Bulls are dealing with now that everything seems to be just all falling apart at once.
312-644-6767 is the number. 670-11 on the text line. The text zone is brought to you by Rosen Hyundai of Algonquin. Save time, shop online at rosenhyundai.com. An 847 texter with a very good point. There could have been disenchanted Bears fans there too. I'm sure there's plenty of overlap in the two.
I would say so.
So what I'm interested in for everybody out there that's listening, one, happy Valentine's Day. For those that are listening to us, good on you. Because either, you did you're either flying solo in life right now, or you took care of everything earlier in the day, or you're making your significant other listen to it on the way to whatever dinner or activities you have for the night. So we appreciate you for that, but let us know what your thoughts were when you first heard this, because this was like when I was on the board for Bernstein and McKnight like 7 hours ago. But hearing this, we were like, this is absolutely a thing. This is 100% something tangible that matters for the Bulls moving forward. And I know later in the show, we'll hear from John Hollinger from The Athletic, who has talked a lot about organizational philosophy, what's important in front office, like things that we as, kind of the casual observers wouldn't know about, mm-hmm. and also some names to keep in mind for, in theory, if there were an opening to happen, not necessarily specifically in Chicago, but across the league, who would be some top names to keep an eye on? So just so we can kind of get some names into the bloodstream, because I think more than any time in the John Paxson tenure, it feels like he's as vulnerable as he's ever been.
Yeah, I would certainly agree with that. And I think it all circles back to, well, it's the aesthetics of this thing, too. Rick, what's the chance that this is going to be the most memorable Bulls sort of contribution to the weekend, All-Star weekend?
I think it's pretty likely, because the only person you have contributing in any of the events is Zach LaVine in 3-point,
right?
Which, I tried to figure out some of the numbers. You can hear me talk about that with Cody Westerlund and Joe Ostrowski on Early Odds tomorrow morning on the Score. But his numbers don't show great for the 3-point contest. It's absolutely possible that he wins, mm-hmm. but it's a really stacked field. The shooters in this game are better than they've ever been. But outside of that, it's Patrick Beverley, who's a Chicago guy, Maybe Anthony Davis, a Chicago guy, gets MVP. But in terms of Bulls-specific contributions, it's Zach LaVine in the three-point contest, and that is it, which is not the most surprising thing in the world, but it's definitely not great, Bob.
Well, and what about the fact, as you just correctly point out, that some of these other Chicago dudes are so prominent in the festivities? Mm-hmm. That's almost like rubbing even more salt in the wounds of Bears fans. And I've done that three times in 10 minutes. I'm sorry, guys. I know we're going to talk Bears at some point.
Yeah.
We're very much on Bulls now. I'm sorry. We'll try not to make it a Bears. Fourth time in 15. But yeah, that clearly is also contributing to this vulnerability that you speak of. And it's unfortunate to see because... I'm old enough to remember when Paxson was viewed in a very, very different light.
Yep.
And yet that feels like a distant memory at this point.
Yeah, I think it was last week someone, I forget who on Twitter, but it was one of those things that went viral of like the sports poster that everybody that you had on your wall growing up. And mine was of after the third championship. It was the first three-peat and it had all five guys that were on the court for when Paxson made the shot.
Mm-hmm.
And then now, like, as older I got and looking at it when I would, like, go back to my mom's house, and until a couple of years, it was actually still up, which is kind of sad. I was just like, Paxson, though. Like, what would have been better long-term for the Bulls? That third championship as such, or him missing that shot, the series continuing to go, and Paxson maybe never becoming the GM of the Bulls?
That's wild to think about.
I know, right?
312. We got to get far down a rabbit hole to go there.
That's true. And we don't have the substances necessarily to do that right now. So 312-644-6767, 670-11 on the text line. Your thoughts on what you heard today and just as you observe All-Star Weekend, we got the celebrity games starting up about right now. The Bulls have a real lack of contribution to it. Your thoughts, and on the way back, we'll hear from Kendrick Perkins, part of the Radio.com family. He's an NBA insider for Radio.com. His thoughts on the Bulls and Jim Boylan are strong. We'll hear some of them next. He's Arthur Arkish. I'm Rick Camp. We're here with you until 10 o'clock on The Score.
If the weather isn't an impediment for potential free agents to come to Chicago, would Jim Boylan be?
Yes, absolutely. I'll tell you what, no good veterans or no superstars are going to go for that right now. Chicago is already having a hard time getting players, let alone you trying to run this high school system and having guys check in, man. You know, you're not about to attract any vets or anything like this. So, I mean, some kind of way, man, he got to figure it out.
Thanks a lot.
Boy, I wish Kendrick Perkins with Mullion Haw would just stop mincing his words so much because... I love hearing Perk. Like, the fact that he's in the media now is great and that he's one of our Radio.com NBA insiders because he doesn't have any Fs to give. He really doesn't. And I appreciate that as someone who just got out of the league not long ago is not afraid to speak truth to pretty much anything. And, I mean, that's the status of the Bulls right now. I'm Rick Camp alongside Arthur Arkish. We're here with you until 10 o'clock. And, yeah, that is exactly where the Bulls are right now, is you're in the third market in theory to a lot of people, still viewed as one of the glamour franchises. Whether that's deserved or not on the whole is debatable, but they just cannot get out of their own way enough to take advantage of an opportunity that presents itself.
Yeah, becoming a bit of a character of themselves, unfortunately. And it's on one hand, Rick, it's not surprising to hear Kendrick say that. I think it's what everyone's thinking and what you'd expect. And on the other hand, to hear it, as you mentioned, from someone just removed from the league, someone who is going to tell you what's on his mind, I don't know, it's a little jarring to hear it even just now. And then, of course, it has everyone circling back to what was the Bulls management team possibly thinking with the extension that seemed just... And you're the basketball guy. I'm asking legitimately what rationalization there was that actually made a bit of sense to why this went down the way it did.
I mean, the best I can think of is Pax is kind of an old school, you know, gritty guy. He likes those teams that have to try really hard, and that's what Boylan puts out there. And I'm sure he is more than willing to keep everybody in the loop on everything. So it's essentially a guy that... has a similar philosophy,
okay,
just on the whole, mm-hmm, but also is someone that the front office probably figures he can control a little, mm-hmm, bit. And I know that Michael Reinsdorf likes him because he'll, you know, he placates. Jim Boylan's been in the league as an assistant for a long time. So once he got the opportunity, he knows where the bread's buttered. So
yeah,
he keeps Michael Reinsdorf happy. He keeps Pax happy. And even if it doesn't make us happy, or this other cut from Kendrick Perkins about maybe not even keeping the players happy, that's another thing that is really, really an issue. So let's take a listen again to Kendrick Perkins about, well, maybe players aren't necessarily too fond of Jim Boylan either.
Those timeouts are getting out of control. And to me, that's just an ego thing and a pride thing, and it's all about Jim. And it's not how it should be. He's just trying to make a statement of this, how he's going to run things. And that's all good if you was winning and you're at the top of the East. But if you're down at the bottom of the bottom and, you know, you're just barely scratching the playoff surface and guys are already complaining for you. You know, people, as a player, you don't want to go to war with a coach like that. That makes you hate him. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And, you know, the thing is that you want guys to buy into what you believe in. And the way he's going about it is just a recipe for disaster.
Yeah, 3-year extension. Thank God. You know, it's one thing even if they had just, because they technically extended him twice. He was interim, and then they gave him through this year.
Yeah.
And then they went on top of that. Like, even if they had said, okay, we like what Jim's done enough, which not many people agreed with, but still, even if the front office said, you know what, we like what he's done enough, we'll give him next year, and we'll reassess. I wouldn't have liked it, but I could understand it because it's short term. It's easy money to get out of if the year had kind of started and gone the way it has so far. But with, you know, it's the Reinsdorf family is not the biggest on paying multiple coaches at the same time for more than 1 year. So I think that's a big aspect of this. That's part of the reason that Jim Boylan's gotten the leash he has. And it's kind of scary as we look forward to, remember, 2021 was supposed to be the plan, and then right after the trade deadline when John Paxson spoke, he's like, well, we're not banking on free agency at this point. Just the masters of moving the goalposts. That's really what this Bulls organization has turned into.
Yeah, it's awfully depressing. I'm not a basketball guy. I know you are. So I've got a couple questions. One, sure. I'm curious about this philosophy you had mentioned where Pax and Boylan kind of align on the grit, you know, the mm-hmm. we're going to outwork everyone, we're going to be the toughest, so on and so forth. Is that antiquated, or are there still other successful management, you know, teams and coaches that are winning with a similar philosophy?
I think Toronto is similar to that.
Okay.
Because the fact that Toronto is on as good of a win pace as last year without Kawhi Leonard, sure. even with as much as Kawhi sat last year, is pretty wild. And that's why some people are thinking about fading them in the playoffs as of right now, is because they put forth more effort than a lot of teams in the regular season.
Okay.
So that's one way of doing it. But their head coach is also innovative, creative, and just is willing to he's basically willing to throw stuff at the wall and see what sticks right now, so that he knows in the playoffs he has a bunch of things he can go to in the right circumstances,
sure.
which is the exact opposite of Jim Boylan, who has said, regardless of my personnel, regardless of situation, we're trying to, and they're just using, you know, build an identity or build a culture of what they want to do, which doesn't make sense. So with the, you know, the defense, while the numbers have technically been better, it's been a lot worse since the new year started. Since the new year, I believe the Bulls are down to 23rd in defensive rating when they were top 10 most of the 2019 part of this season. And part of it's because with the injuries, when you lose your nimble guys, your nimble bigs in terms of Wendell Carter right. and Daniel Gafford, when you want to blitz, pick, and roll, so have your big guy go out there and really force the point guard to make a decision, he has to be able to get his ass back to the basket and to his own guy. When you have 7'2 Luke Kornet, who's big and slow and doesn't move well, and stumbly Chris Felicio, who just isn't good, it's really problematic to still run that same system. Like, Luke Kornet had some success in a different style of system where he more or less got to park his ass by the basket and be tall, which is something he's good at. But not being willing to even, I understand wanting to have a style of play that you have as your bread and butter. But when those guys are out and the fact that you're not willing to adjust at all, that's a recipe for disaster in a lot of circumstances, and especially when you don't have the same amount of talent. And that's kind of where the Bulls are, especially considering they've played a pretty easy schedule.
Yep.
After really in the starting in the next couple weeks, like the last 15 to 20 games, they have a brutal schedule. Like they've played 23 games this year against teams over 500. They have won one of them. And that one game was against the Clippers when Kawhi didn't play. Patrick Beverley didn't play. Lou Williams didn't play. So three of their probably closing five guys or six top guys weren't playing.
Wait, so maybe this isn't rock bottom still is what I'm hearing.
Maybe, maybe not, but at 312-644-6767, Kevin's in Homewood, and Kevin may think it is.
Hey, guys, thanks for taking my call, and I'm trying to do the husbandly duty of getting flowers. So if you hear beeps, it's because I'm at the store getting roses.
Like a 7-Eleven or like a real flower shop?
Let's say a step above 7-Eleven. How about that?
Walmart, gotcha.
But no, I wanted to say here is that, you know, I've been a diehard Bulls fan my whole life, really to the point where I was at the ring ceremony the night 99, first game after the championship era, and I thought that was rock bottom. You didn't expect a lot from that team, but now in the last few years, the expectations came back with the Thibodeau era, and the talent is there, but the management is not. And I'm at the point with a five-year-old, I'm not willing to put the money into the team to go to these games because it's so expensive, and that seems to be the only thing that matters now is the dollar amount that that comes back to the team, and I'm a Lion Bulls fan now because of that. So it's really hard to invest in this, and it's just, you know, for that matter, they'd have to make some really big changes for me to want to spend money as a fan. So that's my point. I hope they can make the changes.
All right, Kevin, really appreciate it. Go roses if you can. That's always a safe bet.
Obviously, like at a Jewel or something, right?
Yeah.
CVS?
Yeah. Yes.
I'd say a Jewel because they have like the walk-in place for the flowers. You know, you can get like a bouquet of roses right there.
Yeah, that's true. Chris Dickens, Brandon Orlowski on the other side of the glass. And I think Kevin is definitely not alone because we read off the attendance numbers before. And the thing is, too, it doesn't help the Bulls that the best team in basketball right now, or at least the best regular season team in basketball, is only 90 miles north. The Milwaukee Bucks are incredible. They're, even when Giannis is out, the few games he's been out, doesn't really matter. They've lost one game when he's out, which is pretty crazy at this point. And I've been to their new stadium. It's really nice. They play a fun style of basketball. It's one of the three best players in the league right now that's up there. And even though it's Milwaukee, it's an easy drive, especially if you're going to plunk down the money to go to an NBA game. The drive is worth it, and you get to see a better product. So there's a lot of things working against the Bulls right now. I think we're finally getting the perfect storm that everybody's been wanting to force change.
Well, you sold me. I want to go see this new the new court in Milwaukee. I've been to Miller Park, of course, to go watch Cubs Brewers, and that's mm-hmm. always a blast. And it kind of it's in the back of my head because we're talking about how the team in Milwaukee, the NBA team, is so good, and obviously this plucky Brewers team hasn't made life super fun for the Cubs the past couple of years either.
True.
So Milwaukee's kind of got our number at the moment. But yeah, no, it was a good call. I'm glad that Kevin, I believe it was, is finding smarter ways to invest his money, especially on Valentine's Day.
Very true.
Go get those flowers. That's the glasses half full. You don't want to spend money on the Bulls. At least you can take care of more important things and fulfill your husband responsibilities. So that's a job well done, Kevin.
Ken's in Schaumburg, and Ken's on the score.
Yes. You there?
Hey.
Yes.
Thanks for calling.
Hi, guys. Thanks for taking my call. First of all, Valentine's Day is garbage. Let's all be honest here. You know, it's not something you want to do ever.
Okay.
Listen, I'm wondering, you know, like listening to Anthony Davis say that Chicago is the mecca of basketball. He's quoted as saying this, correct?
Yeah, he wasn't talking about professionally. He was saying in terms of where talent comes from.
That's where talent comes from, correct? Yes. So, So where's the disconnect here where, you know, where we can't harness, you know, this in our colleges and in our professional team? You know, is it the coaching? Is it the front office? You know, I tend to believe it's more so. I'm not even like a big Bulls fan. I grew up watching the 90s Bulls. I loved it, you know, but I can't watch it now. It's just garbage.
All right. Thanks for the call, Ken. Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to make connections to the Chicago college basketball teams because, quite frankly, I don't care about college basketball, really. College basketball is a rough watch. But I'm also fully admit I am a snooty NBA fan in that way. If I watch so much NBA basketball, college basketball is a rough watch.
Well, I get where he's coming from, though.
Oh, 100%.
Because it's very infuriating as a Illinois college basketball fan in general, just a fan of any team in Illinois, that the recruiting for kids in Illinois is so down. You do not get local talent. And it's the truth. I mean, we have some of the best high school basketball players in the country, and you're not getting anything into those programs. And then at the same thing at the professional level, people who grew up in Chicago don't want to play for an organization. So it's infuriating as a Illinois basketball fan in general.
309. It's Peoria Matt texting in. Good question. Where do you think he's hiding the bodies? I'm going to go with the crawl space. That guy seemed a little off, so maybe he goes, you know, thinking they'll look below ground. Maybe he goes a little bit above. I don't know. Maybe the attic.
He's got a freezer.
That's true. The bottom of the hour is brought to you by Northwestern Basketball. I'm sure they're proud of that. Join Northwestern Basketball at the new Welsh Ryan Arena this season. Remaining home opponents include Illinois, Penn State, and Minnesota. Single game tickets to see Chicago's Big Ten team are on sale now at NUSports.com. Let's take a time out and come back. And I had a conversation earlier in the day with John Hollinger from The Athletic, and I think it dovetails really well with what we're talking about right now about building a front office, building an organization, where the Bulls stand, and just the status of the NBA as we head into the unofficial second half, even though it's like the 60% of the season's over. So when we come back, we'll hear that. He's Arthur Arkush. I'm Rick Camp. We're here with you until 10 o'clock on The Score. This segment's brought to you by the all-new Super Duper Slam, just $6.99 at Denny's. They're playing to the audience right here. Introducing the Denny's Super Duper Slam with bacon, sausage, egg, hash browns, and all-you-can-eat pancakes for just $6.99. The deal is so super, we just had to add a duper for a limited time. Price may vary. See you at Denny's. He's Arthur Arkush. I'm Rick Camp. We're here with you until 10 o'clock on The Score. So earlier today, I had the opportunity to speak with John Hollinger, who's a senior NBA analyst at The Athletic. And he just got out of the Memphis Grizzlies front office where he was for the last 8 years. His media stuff before doing that at ESPN was so good. He's the creator of PER. And he has the Hollinger and Duncan podcast, which focuses a lot on front office stuff. So it seemed like a perfect time to talk with him. So the conversation started with me asking him, what's the biggest misconception there is between what fans think and what actually happens in a front office?
You can't really operate it like you operate your fantasy team, I guess. It's not just about trading so-and-so and drafting so-and-so. There's so much that goes into that in terms of coaching and player development and the medical staff and the other people you have all around your team. And it's managing that whole aspect of it. Because a lot of that determines, you know, what ROI you're going to get from any of your player transactions.
So if I were to put you in the position of, for sake of argument, Seattle gets an expansion team and everybody's happy because there's a team back in Seattle, and you were put in charge of building the basketball ops portion, what's most important to you when you think about building a properly run front office?
There's a lot of important people decisions that need to be made. It's hard to say which of those is the single most important, right? But you need the scouting infrastructure, the medical infrastructure, and the player development infrastructure. And you need all three of those things to be good. You need to select good players, need to have them upright and available for the games, and you need to have the staff who can get the most out of those players to have them achieve their potential. So it's really three completely different prongs. And so to say which of those is more important than the others is difficult. And then obviously, you know, there's stuff that goes deeper than that. You still have to make the right choices on personnel and draft and trades and all that, and select the right coach. And that's why it's hard, though.
Who are some of the franchises that you point to as model franchises in the league at this point?
Well, I mean, certainly the Spurs of the last two decades who have been, you know, sort of, I mean, their whole up and down the organization has been picked clean by other franchises trying to emulate the model of success that they had. I think you start there, definitely. I think there are other franchises that have enough of a history of sustained success, whether you look at like a Boston or a Miami or a Utah, where certainly teams in the league look at that and think they can emulate that. And then I think even in the last couple of years, there are a couple of other organizations, you know, Toronto Raptors obviously have become just absolutely first rate across the board. And I think the LA Clippers in the last couple of years have really changed their stripes too.
One of the pillars you brought up was player development. And I guess looking at it from more of a Chicago angle, it's been something that the Bulls have struggled with when they get, you know, when they even get guys that seem to be really promising into their fold. What do you look for and how do you build the proper player development structure? Because I think that's something that a lot of us just don't have that great of a concept of.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm not sure I'm the perfect guy to be asking either, to be honest, but it's something that a lot of franchises struggle with, is what does that entail and who are the right people to oversee and execute that, and how do you measure that? And, you know, obviously there are other elements now in the league that you didn't have in terms of the G League franchise. Now, you know, the Bulls now, they have the Windy City Bulls to potentially, you know, have guys play for if they're not getting minutes with the main franchise. Although the last couple of years that hasn't been as much of an issue because there's been, you know, not as stiff competition maybe for game minutes with the varsity.
Yeah, there's plenty of minutes available if you want them.
Yeah. And but, you know, there's a little of a chicken and egg question too, obviously, of like, you know, when a player doesn't work out, what was it, right? Was it that you selected somebody who wasn't good enough, or was it that you didn't get the most out of that player you selected, or was it some combination of the two? And it's hard to know with 100% certainty. So that, you know, that's where it gets a little tricky, where the art meets the science, I should say, because quantitatively you'll never know. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. Because when you bring that up, the name that pops to my mind, and probably not surprisingly in Chicago, is Lauri Markkanen, because of how promising he looked his rookie year and how he's seemingly regressed, but then there's so many elements that go into it where it's not sure if Jim Boylan or Chris Fleming, whoever's truly in charge of that offense, is putting Markkanen in best positions for him to succeed and get to his spots versus actual player development versus just what's in him. Because I know there's plenty of times where Bulls observers are like, if he would just get more aggressive and demand the ball, that could probably put him in a better position to score or just to put himself in a better place within the offense. That it's just something frustrating that, like you mentioned, I don't know how easy that is to be able to determine on any level of the organization.
Yeah. And then, you know, I think there's a physical question you can ask there too, because you wonder if he was diminished at the start of this year before he went out with that pelvic stress fracture, I believe it was.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think that's a question you can ask as well. And that's an important part of it, too. You know, having the right strength coaches and the right people in charge of that program that, you know, can have the players' bodies in peak condition. I think that's, you know, that's an area where I think the Bulls have had some issues in their past.
I feel like this past offseason, a lot of Bulls fans were kind of doing the gif of Joey from Friends looking through the rain window that he has at New Orleans, and how David Griffin built up that front office and, you know, stealing a lot of the training staff from Phoenix and being able to put that in place, of just because the Bulls have had their issues. Everybody knows, you know, the Luol Deng stuff with the spinal tap, and there's been other issues since then. I guess on the whole, what is the outward perception of the Chicago Bulls?
you know, certainly that they're in a bit of a rut. I think nobody denies that. I think, you know, it's interesting because this same group built that team with, you know, with really several good draft picks and hiring Thibodeau and really had a tremendous run, you know, late picks on Mirotić and Jimmy Butler and kind of lost their way a little bit since then. And it's almost a little as an observer from the outside, it's a little mystifying, you know, with the stretch of being hot at the poker table and then cold and the reality is somewhere in between, or something changed there, or what, you know, what happened, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's the same group that, you know, they built that whole team with Noah and Rose and all those guys.
Yeah, it's really interesting. It does seem like some of it changed when John Paxson tried to take the step back and put Gar Forman to the forefront. Just not trying to necessarily get anybody fired or put you in that position to, but got John Hollinger with me on the score. He's the senior NBA columnist from The Athletic, the Hollinger and Duncan podcast as well. Really great resource for those that want to go inside the NBA and especially the front office aspects of it. Follow John on Twitter at John Hollinger. He's the former VP of basketball operations for the Memphis Grizzlies. Who are some of the names of up-and-coming executives that you think would be in line for whatever the next top guy in basketball ops would be?
You mean like who would be some candidates if an opening were to materialize?
Yes.
I would say probably the two of the top guys you would think of would be Bobby Webster in Toronto and Michael Zarin in Boston, both of whom have been in their positions long, you know, for a long time to accumulate a lot of experience, but still, you know, haven't gotten their turn yet to run their own franchise, but have won championships and been, you know, been big parts of teams that won championships. So I think those are names that would probably be at the top of the list. You know, I'm circling through my brain here a little bit. You know, like Justin Zanuck in Utah is like technically the GM there, but Dennis Lindsay is kind of overseeing as the president. So I don't know if he'd even be available or not, but he'd certainly be a name that would be out there. So I'd say just off the top of my head, those are a couple that I would think of.
All right, let's get to this season and what's been going on so far. I'm just really intrigued at how a lot of things have transpired so far. How many teams do you think realistically can win the title at this point?
Some nights you look and you say one when you watch the Milwaukee Bucks play. Because they've been just lights out awesome. They're having a historic season. So I think you have to start there. And I think people would be viewing them differently, I think, if they were in, you know, maybe in a larger market. Because, I mean, they've been awesome. They've been the class of the league, and it's not even close. Now, having said that, they're not a defending champion, right? So I think there's going to be always a little bit of a question until you get one with them. So I think then you look at Toronto, who won last year, even though they don't have Kawhi Leonard for this go-around. I think you look at the two teams in L.A., the Clippers and the Lakers, sort of the presumptive Western Conference finals right now. We'll see if that comes to pass. But I think they're the other two teams that are really at the top of your list. And then you get into more kind of, you know, the wild cards. You know, Boston, but do they have enough size? Philadelphia, I think everyone is scared of how talented they are. Doesn't want to be the team that faces them in the playoffs, but they haven't been able to get out of their own way on some nights either. And then I think Houston is another team that's going to be really tricky for teams to match up against in the playoffs with the way they play. But can they do that successfully four times in a row in a postseason? I'm not sure.
Toronto's been fascinating just coming off of the 15-game win streak that they had. Two-parter of just how good has Nick Nurse been as their coach, especially this year without having Kawhi? And where I worry about them is maybe down the stretch of playoff games. Would they just run everything through Pascal Siakam, or would they maybe be a team, and I think of, you know, the beautiful game Spurs against the Heat, where it's literally just going to be wherever the offense takes the ball on a given possession?
I think it's going to be a little more of the latter for them, but I do think offensively it is a question. You know, do they really have enough there to score against good defenses that are locked into what they're doing? I will say their end-to-end speed is a really underrated way of how they play and how they're effective, because they're able to get early, quick shots a lot of times, or just get teams unsettled and into mismatches. But that's a harder thing to do in the postseason, too. It tends to slow down. I will say this. I mean, I think Nick Nurse should probably win Coach of the Year. He's done a tremendous job with that team. has been really creative in terms of coming up with different defenses and different looks to throw at teams, different options late in games. So I think he's absolutely maximized what he has on the floor there.
One more before I let you go, and I really appreciate your time. Being one of the godfathers of analytics, what's one of the next frontiers that you think is being looked at right now that maybe a lot of the more casual observers aren't paying close enough attention to yet?
So I would say the one place where analytics has really taken off has been on the frontier of trying to keep guys healthy. You know, we have all these cameras, all these wearable devices now, and teams are just trying to figure out what to do with all this information and all this data they can collect from it and how they can use it to maximize player health and do things like calibrate. When do we need to sit a guy out on a back-to-back? You know, when is the injury risk too great? You know, I think we've seen some of that with players, with teams choosing to optionally rest players for games. But I think that's one that is still done more by feel than by, you know, scientific kind of information. And I think teams are getting to the point where they can make those decisions more based on the information in the analytics from those types of devices rather than just kind of going by feel.
John, I really appreciate your time. I wish the weather was better for you this weekend.
At least it's not raining.
That's true. At least an optimistic view from John Hollinger. Although if you follow him at John Hollinger, lots of complaining about the weather here. But, you know, he was in Memphis, and then I believe he lives in Atlanta now. But anyway, we're going to switch gears, coming to the top of the hour here. Kevin Kaduk, you probably know him more from Yahoo right now, doing his own newsletter, the Midway Minute newsletter. It's a lot going on in the baseball world, which is a lot of his expertise, but he can kind of spray to all fields. So we'll talk with him next. He's Arthur Arkesheim, Rick Camp, and this is The Score.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.